Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved. Elizabeth.
Hey Sheila, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm looking forward to talking today.
Yeah, me too. Just a little kind of sidebar before we get going, because it's in my head, because I was just listening to this podcast today, and it just reminded me of some of the comments that we've been getting on our podcast about some of the topics resonating with people. And I was thinking how fun it is when you're listening to a podcast and like something pops up and it's like, ooh, that reminds me of this or whatever. So I had that experience today listening to that podcast that I think I've mentioned, the Giggly Squad. That's a couple of millennials. I think they're in their 30s. So I'll say young women. Have you heard of it or
I
go
listened
ahead?
to a bit of it per your recommendation.
Yeah, I get it. It's entertaining, I think. And a lot of the reason I listen to it is because I really like the dynamic between them. And I almost do it for the tips that I feel like we can get. Because even though we definitely discuss different topics and we are very different people, I like like I said, the energy, the dynamic between them. And I like the part that they can entertain and be amusing, but talk about things that are somewhat serious. So anyway, just to get to the reason I'm calling. So one of them, Paige DeSorbo, is one of the co-hosts, is actually from Albany, where I lived for over 25 years. And so she was talking on the podcast that I just listened to, which was I think a few weeks ago, about the fact that she was up in Albany and she was giving a talk because all the stuff, they're getting very successful with the podcast and they're also doing shows all around the country and they have a bestseller now. And she mentioned that she was doing it at a club. And this is not a nightclub. This is, she said, the Fort Orange Club. And I'm like, the Fort Orange Club. Wow. So this is like an old boys network club in Albany that my former husband belonged to, very staid. I think they even have people, some residents live there. And I was like, whoa, they had Paige give a talk. And then as she's proceeding, she just said, and it made me laugh because she said, yeah, when I got there and I walked in the room. So this kind of describes why I had that reaction. When I walked in the room, I look on this wall and there's a huge wall with a bunch of portraits of old white men staring at me. Because that's, and I just immediately could picture it because I'd been there a number of times. And so I thought, I just really had a laugh because I thought, I know exactly how she felt. And here's the kicker. After I stopped listening, I thought, I have a little thing in my head about something about that club. And I went and I did my Googling thing. You know how much I like Googling. And it turns out that this club did not allow women to join as members until, wait for it, 1989.
Wow.
That's not 1889, I'm saying. It's 1989. I mean, 1889 would have been early, but yes. So some of the times I went, I was only allowed probably in because I was with a male.
Oh.
So anyway, just a little factoid on, but the point I was making more is it was kind of fun to listen her to her talk about it and have it be something specific that I knew about.
Yeah, that's always nice.
Yeah. So
Always
I
nice.
hope when we talk sometimes, maybe not, it's not location, but some of the things we talk about really hit somebody like that. So anyway, so that's my
Yeah.
little story.
Well, the topic that we wanted to discuss today is how money and beliefs and thoughts and behavior around money affect relationships, not just romantic relationships, but business relationships, friendships, etc. I had a really interesting conversation with some friends last weekend about this topic, and it got me thinking. So, in my marriage to my ex-husband, we kept our finances totally separate. He is a CFO. And so when we first met, he was tracking every $2 transaction. And I was balancing my checkbook with overdraft protection. So we decided that that wasn't really going to mesh. And we decided to keep our finances totally separate. And I guess it never really occurred to me that may not work going forward in a romantic relationship. And so I had an interesting conversation about how my two friends have addressed that issue in their relationships. And it also got me thinking about my business partnership with my partner in Mergelane, Sue. We are very in sync on how we deal with money in our business. We tend to make decisions at about the same pace about money. We tend to value money in a similar way. And it's just made it very easy. And I guess I just kind of wanted to explore the topic of what happens when it's not so easy and what you can do to both compromise in relationships and also to identify when things are just irreconcilable, because it is kind of a big issue in partnerships.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do. And just from the perspective that I come from, the model of my parents, and then we continued it, and it was probably our generation. There was absolutely no thought that you would keep your finances separate. When you got married, at least most of the people in my peer group that I can remember, not that we talked about money that much, immediately joint checking account, you know, everybody pooled their money. It was just that kind of a thing. Again, I'm remembering also, I had a lot of friends who were stay-at-home moms at the time. So it was a necessary kind of evil, I mean, to do that because it wasn't like most of us, the women, were having anything to put in our bank accounts if we didn't have that kind of synergy with our husbands. But I have grown to realize from progressing and just, you know, I have three children now that that's not always the norm. That things can be very similar to what you talked about, where people keep their finances separate. And I'm not saying the way that I did it eliminated any arguments. I think both ways can cause the arguments that we're probably going to talk a little bit about, but it's a different framework where the arguments come from, maybe. So that's an interesting piece of it. I'm kind of curious about the conversation with your friends, what they do, just to throw all the different kind of perspectives in the mix. So what was the result of that conversation?
Yeah, so it was a male and a female friend. My male friend had more of a traditional view, and he's in his late 40s, just for some context. So it's kind of unusual that he has this traditional view, in my experience. He likes to have joint checking accounts, he likes to have visibility into what each partner is spending. He likes to have shared goals and to continue to check in on those goals.
Unless his partner has more financial expertise than he does, he likes to be the primary decision maker in that.
Ooh, okay. That
That one came out of nowhere. Okay. However, with that said, he does feel that if his partner has opinions that she wants to share or has expertise that she wants to share, that he would welcome that. And if she did have more experience in investing than him, and they agreed that she was better to take on that task, that he would be willing to defer.
Okay, we don't need to explore this too much further, but my question is, and who makes that decision?
Yeah,
I mean, because
I think this is kind of tough, like we're saying, because that would be a joint decision, but in some ways it's not an objective decision.
not at all. No, because I mean, both my husband, former husband, and I were lawyers. I would say we probably had the same financial expertise in our backgrounds, and if push had come to shove and we had differing views, I don't know how we would have resolved that one. Like, who's better at this?
Right.
So what did the other so this is one friend, and then this other person is another friend. It's not, they're not in the relationship together.
Right. Two
Okay.
random friends.
Okay.
So the other friend is sort of in between. I would say that my former marriage and my male friend's ideal situation are sort of polar opposites. And my fuller former marriage, we had totally separate accounts. I had full jurisdiction over my account. He had full jurisdiction over his account. We split joint expenses 50-50, like mortgage, etc. Anything that was deemed to be an elective expense, we paid for ourselves. So I felt like that was on the other end of the spectrum. And my female friend was sort of smack dab in the middle, and that she's also divorced. And in her previous marriage, they had a joint checking account, but then they each had their own accounts and they made major decisions jointly. And neither of them had more authority than the other. They had to just come to an agreement or not make the purchase. And they each had their own individual accounts for sort of like, safety nets, and then also just frivolous spending.
So, first question, did she feel that was a good way to go and successful?
Yeah, she did feel like that was pretty successful. And my male friend, who I explained earlier, that has been successful in his previous relationships as well.
The way that he approached things.
Yeah. However, he's never been in a relationship in which the woman had more investing experience than him, so he has been the primary decision maker in the past. And, it's his perspective as to whether it works, but based on our conversations, it does kind of seem like it worked for the women in which he's been in the relationships.
And I'm going to ask a couple more questions. These women were working.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And the third question, which can really throw a monkey wrench into the whole whatever, did either of them have children?
No, that
Hmm.
is a really good point. That does kind of throw a big monkey wrench into it.
Oh, like completely huge. And you know, my personal experience, we had children very quickly. So I could not speak at all to a situation, even the way we set things up. I mean, I would have been working if we didn't have children. So then I'm not quite sure how we would have ultimately had the permanent framework in that situation, but I feel just because of it was our generation like that, we would have still done with the joint stuff, pooled our money. So I think it would have been more if we ended up disagreeing a lot about expenses, then we would have been dealing with that framework. But when you have kids, I mean, because it's so expensive, and you can agree or disagree. Like, if you have a frugal bone versus a more, I'm okay with, you know, being a little uncomfortable with a little bit of debt and all that, then oh my God, like,
Major fireworks sometimes because you're just from the get-go. I mean, if you breastfeed, then the food issue, but if you don't, formula, there's such different levels of cost associated with formula. And then just everything, the products you buy, the daycare you might go to, or the situation, whether it's a daycare or whether it's a, individual caregiver, all that kind of stuff can really. So I don't know if I think maybe it'd be good to narrow our conversation to the people that you talked to that didn't have children, because I think we'll be on this for like at least a week if we don't.
Well, and for me, my goal in this conversation is not to outline what people should or should not do. I think it's just helpful to think about this topic because I just didn't really think about it. And I had a couple of realizations in having these conversations. The first is I took for granted the fact that I was married to somebody who was very responsible and knowledgeable financially. And I never had to worry about his financial decision making. And I don't necessarily need to be in a relationship with a CFO, but I do think it's a deal breaker for me if I can't trust their financial decision making ability.
That's an excellent point. You're right. Yeah. And it's not like that you're saying, oh, they're like they gamble the money away, or they're a spendthrift, or they just rack up extreme credit card debts. I mean, all of those things are possibilities. But even if you are just a little bit out of sync because the person doesn't completely get a real grip on the ramifications of some decisions that are being made at the time, financially down the road. Like even just, are you putting money in your retirement account? Especially the place you work matches it. Like that's a really good plan. It's like free money.
Right. And there's a spectrum of risk, and I am willing to accept financial risk, actually, probably more so than most people, because I have a little bit more of a safety net, and I also have been involved with startups for so long. So I accept risk. I don't accept an inability to make what I deem to be smart financial decisions. And that's very subjective, I realize, but I think for me, I need to feel like I trust and actually even admire their financial decision-making ability.
And I am just gonna call you a little bit on the fact that you said you're willing to accept more risk than some people, and then you mentioned the safety net, because like if you have a safety net, that kind of takes away a little bit from the risk factor. So I understand, like you could say, this is an investment, we could lose everything that we're putting into it. And you may be a little bit more comfortable with a risk because of the fact that even if you lose everything, you're still financially okay. Like you're still going to pretty much maintain the same lifestyle way of living, even with that. And so when we talk about risk, I just wanted to put that out there that some people who are in relationships, like they have different levels of risk. And the risk really does mean if I commit and this goes belly up, like we're homeless.
Yeah, and I think that there's some truth to that, but when I was married to Derek, we took some pretty big risks when we were younger for startup stuff. And I do think that I have a higher risk tolerance than more pe than most people. And I'm fine with that, but it's more risk in, making potentially lucrative financial decisions versus risk in spending to buy a material thing that we can't quite afford. I have less tolerance about that.
That's a valid point. That is. And before I forget, this actual point that was in my head that I want to throw in the mix also. I don't know about the two people you spoke to, if either of them have been in marriages. I mean, you're talking about your marriage, but that creates a whole nother layer because once you marry somebody, most laws in most states, you're kind of on the hook for whatever
Right.
they do. And so it's like, it's one thing when you're living with somebody, their financial decisions are not going to impact on you to the same extent that once you say I do. Like once you say I do, that's a tough one.
Right. The other thing that this brought up for me is thinking about the level of oversight that I'm comfortable with. So, in my marriage, I had virtually no oversight. I had my own account to spend on everything except for our mortgage and utilities, basically. So, in some ways, I really liked that. I felt that independence. But in looking back on it, it's kind of disconnected that you aren't working together toward any financial goal or having to come to some sort of a meeting of the minds on that, because it's easy to say, fine, I don't like the way you're doing it. I'll just do it my way. You just do it your way. But when you have to actually work together on things, it's a lot more connective. And I think I'd like to do more of that in future relationships.
Yeah, really good point. And it made me think of a few different things that will prove out that point that you talked. It does lead to more connectiveness because, like, for example, if you're pooling all your money and it's like, all right, we really want a vacation. I'm not just going to pay my end of it. And then there's less kind of conversation around it. It's like you really do need to figure out how much this can cost. And it kind of helps you to get to know the person better because you find out, well, why is it that you want to take this kind of vacation? So you have to have more conversations, not about money, but about the circumstances in which you're spending the money. And then you get to know the person on a more intimate level because they may talk about like their past and this is why I like this. Do you understand where I'm going with that? I'm
I do.
hoping I'm,
Yeah.
yeah. So I agree. It's the disconnection that you described that you had about the fact that you kind of were just, you had your own little money and no oversight and nobody needed to comment. There's a certain perk to that, especially if you think there's going to be some judgment going on. But on the other hand, it's lonely. I mean, why are you going to get married if that's the way your life's going to be?
Right. Well, and I also think it applies to business relationships too, because my business partner and I have kind of decided that I am just going to have more oversight than she is, just because we've decided to divide labor that way. And there's part of me that likes that, but again, it is somewhat disconnective, and I think we could probably be better if we work together more often. And also, I think the speed at which your partner makes financial decisions is really important. I don't think my parents would mind me saying this, but they make financial decisions at a very different speed. My dad is a CPA by trade and is very conservative in his financial decisions. He's made excellent financial decisions, but he does research to infinitum. And my mom is not that way. And that's caused a lot of arguments over the years. And I've been pretty lucky in both my business partnerships and in my marriage that we made decisions at fairly similar paces. And I just want to think about that going forward.
It's a point that I hadn't thought about because now I'm thinking about not only my own marriage, but like my parents and the same thing. There was a pretty good synergy in terms of researching a little bit and looking at it and not pulling the trigger very quickly, but not investigating it to death. Although I
Right.
will say, I probably, now that I'm remembering back, to that situation when we bought our house in my marriage, and I think this is okay to share, it's not anything. I probably was a little bit more of a risk taker. And we were looking at a certain price, and then we saw this house that was such a good house to purchase, but it was above what both of us had agreed was the comfortable, safe price. The other one we were looking at was going to be a starter home, as they said. That's what you used to do. You used to have starter homes and like training wheels, and then it's not really possible these days anymore, but that's the way it was back in the 80s. And I kind of got something inside of me and I said, no, I think this other house, even though it's a reach, and being the attorney I was, married to an attorney, I kind of wrote up a brief. And I put the pros and I put the cons, and I did it in such a manner that it was coherent, and the cons really were all things we could deal with. And so it kind of won the day. And it was one of the best decisions that we made in our marriage, that house. So I think we would have very much regretted if we had not done it. We took it slow. But we didn't take it that slow. I knew if we didn't act quickly, that was the circumstances. If we didn't act quickly, we were going to lose the potential to buy that house. So I probably acted quicker than he wanted to, and maybe even quicker than I normally would have. So that does really play a factor sometimes.
Yeah, and I think with any partnership, understanding your strengths is helpful. I think that we made a couple of financial decisions both in my business partnership and in my marriage that wouldn't have happened if I wouldn't have pushed a bit. And that's one of my strengths. I don't make uncalculated financial decisions, but I am a little bit more risk tolerant than the average person. And that has more or less played out pretty well in all of my partnerships. And one thing that I've just accepted is that I am not as money motivated as I'd like to be in a business sense. And I think it's really important for me to be in a partnership in business and also think in a life partnership. That I'm with somebody who's more money motivated than I am because I like making money. I'm capable of making money. I just don't always prioritize it. And so it's nice to just sort of have somebody as a push on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the conundrum with this whole conversation we're having. You don't want to be polar opposites because that usually does lead to problems, but you also don't want to be both kind of in the middle, like standing on each other, because sometimes having a little bit of difference going on, as you say, brings out the strengths in each of you and then leads to more success than if you just kind of were in lockstep with each other. As you said when we first started talking about this, no solutions. It was more, I think we kind of wanted to just kind of parse out, talk about these issues that I think a lot of people face and what personally, how we've kind of dealt with them a little bit, or successes and challenges.
In conclusion, money matters in many ways.
Money matters. I don't think you made that one up, but it does. And it can, unfortunately, in relationships, whether they're romantic, business, just friendship even, which we didn't even get into and we're not going to go there right now, but it can have a huge impact. And hearkening back to a lot of our previous podcasts where we emphasize communication. Communication is always important. But for this specific issue, I think that can only go so far. I think syncing your personalities and assessing who has the greater strengths and who has the greater challenges in decisions is a really key part of it too.
All right. Well, thanks for helping me think through this.
Yeah,
Onward and
no.
upward.
This was a good conversation. Till next time.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.